The Sheba was a device designed to restrain and punish recalcitrant slaves and to prevent them escaping. It was a heavy Y-shaped yoke cut from the fork of an acacia tree. The prisoner was stripped naked, to add to his humiliation. Then the crotch of the Sheba was fitted against his throat. The thick trunk extended in front of him. They lifted it to shoulder height and bound the fork in place behind his neck with twisted rawhide ropes. Finally, Penrod's bare arms were lashed to the long pole in front of him. With both arms pinioned, he was unable to feed himself or lift a bowl of water to his lips. He could not clean himself of his bodily waste. If he allowed the pole to sink from horizontal, the fork would crush his windpipe and choke him. To move, he had first to raise the whole mass of contraption and keep it balanced. He could not lie on his side or back, nor was he able to sit. If he wished to rest or sleep, he must do so on his knees, with the end of the pole resting on the earth in front of him. At best, he could only totter a few paces before the weight of the unbalanced pole forced him to his knees again. The feast continued, while Penrod knelt in the centre of the courtyard. Afterwards he was driven back to the courtyard of the Agagiers. Mumundigna whipped him along like a beast of burden. He was unable to eat or drink, and nobody would help him. He could not sleep, for the pain of the Sheba goaded him awake. It was too large and cumbersome to allow him to enter his cell, so he knelt in the open courtyard with an Agagier assigned to guard him day and night. By the third day he had lost all feeling in his arms, and his hands were blue and swollen. Although he staggered around the wall of the courtyard to keep in the shadow, the sun's rays reflected from the lime-washed walls, and his naked body reddened and blistered. His tongue was like a dry sponge in his parched mouth, for the heat in the noonday sun was intense. By the morning of the fourth day he was becoming weak and disoriented, hovering on the verge of unconsciousness. Even his eyeballs were drying out, and still no one would help him. As he knelt in a corner of the courtyard, he heard the voices of the Agagiers arguing nearby. They were discussing how much longer he would be able to hold out. Then there was silence, and he forced open his swollen eyelids. For a moment he thought he was hallucinating. Amber was coming towards him across the yard. She carried a large pitcher balanced on her head in the manner of an Arab woman. The Agagiers were watching her, but none tried to intervene. She took the pitcher off her head and placed it on the ground. Then she dipped a sponge into it and held it to his lips. He was unable to speak, but he sucked it gratefully. When she had given him as much as he could drink, she replaced the empty pitcher on her head and said softly, "I will come again tomorrow." At the same time the following day, Osman Atalan entered the yard and stood in the shade of the cloister, with Al-Nur and Mumundigna. Amber came in shortly after his arrival. She saw him at once and stopped, balancing the pitcher with one hand, slim and graceful as a gazelle on the point of flight. She stared at Osman. Then she lifted her chin defiantly and came to where Penrod knelt. She dipped the sponge and gave him drink. Osman did not stop her. When she had finished and was ready to leave, she whispered without moving her lips, "Jacob will come for you. Be ready." She walked past Osman on her way to the gate. He watched her go impassively. Amber came again the next day. Osman was not there, and most of the Agagiers seemed to have lost interest. She gave Penrod water, then fed him asida and dara porridge, spooning it into his mouth as though he were an infant, wiping the spillage off his chin. Then she used another sponge to wash his filth from the back of his legs and his buttocks. "I wish you did not have to do that," he said. She gave him a particular look and replied, "You still do not understand, do you?" He was too bemused and weak to try to fathom her meaning. She went on with barely a pause, "Jacob will come for you tonight."